Naked Scientists with Dr. Chris and Dr. Dave, and we're talking this week about the science of heart disease, and from the London Chest Hospital is Neil Campbell. Hi, Neil.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I reckon heart disease, apart from killing one person in three of who will be listening to this programme, must be a very broad term. It must be one of the most misused terms. What does it actually mean?
It is a broad term, Chris. It covers a wide variety of different problems. People can either have problems with their heart arteries, they can have problems with the heart muscle, they can have problems with the electrical circuitry of the heart, and some of those patients will need pacemakers. And some of those problems can overlap. So, for example, a patient who develops problems in their heart arteries may develop a problem with the heart muscle or the electrical circuitry of the heart.
Who gets it?
Anyone can get it. Some people, specifically in terms of people who have narrowings in the heart arteries, there are certain risk factors for that. People who smoke are more likely to get it. People who have diabetes, high blood pressure, or high level of fats in the blood can get it.
Now, when we say you've got problems with your heart, what's actually provoking those problems? And why would those things that you just said actually lead to the condition? Why do they actually do nasty things?
Essentially, going back to basics, the heart is a pump, which is a large muscle. It's the engine system of the heart. And the engine needs its own plumbing system, and those are called the coronary arteries. The coronary arteries can, if we live in a Western society, develop narrowings over time. And all of those factors which I mentioned can encourage narrowings to occur. If those narrowings become very severe, or if, for example, a clot develops in one of the heart arteries, then one of those arteries can become blocked. That area of muscle, which is supplied by that particular area of the plumbing system, the coronary artery, can become damaged, and that is what's known as a heart attack.
What's actually going on in the artery to get that furring up, those plaques that are made of that fatty material?
I think we're going to be hearing a little bit later about what the actual structure of an artery is. But essentially, each artery has got three layers. It's got an inner layer, which is the layer which is closest to the blood. It's got a middle layer, which has got a muscle layer, and that allows the body to regulate the size of the artery, regulate the diameter size of the artery, and we can give particular drugs to change that size. And there's also an outer lining, which connects the artery to the outer structures. When people, for example, if they smoke or if they have high levels of fats in their blood, those people are more likely for fatty deposits to build up on the inner lining of the artery, and that can predispose people to problems such as heart attacks.
So why is it that it takes, say, 40 or 50 years before people start to see this manifest, and why does it tend to run in families?
Even if you look at very, very young children, we can see, if we live in a country such as ours with our diet and our lifestyle, that the very basic building blocks of these fatty deposits are beginning to occur. These things don't happen overnight, that narrowings occur over many years, and it's often only when people get into their 40s or their 50s that those narrowings will occur. There are some people who have family conditions who are more likely to develop heart disease. And those people often have conditions where they have very high levels of fats within the blood. If you have high levels of fats within the blood, more of those fatty deposits can build up, and that makes heart disease more likely to occur.
So is there anything we can actually do once these vessels become furred up in this way?
There are medicines which can treat it. If someone is actually having a heart attack, and when someone is having a heart attack, the heart artery completely blocks, there are two main treatments which doctors can use. The first is clot-busting drugs, and we call that treatment thrombolysis, where very strong clot-busting drugs are given into somebody's vein to open up the clot. Newer treatments have been developed, where what we can do is we can pass wires and tubes up from the top of someone's leg or from their wrist. We can pass those directly into someone's heart artery. We can do this when someone's awake. We can open up the heart artery, and then we can place a special little metal scaffold called a stent to keep the artery open.
Why do you need that? Why can't you just squash the fat out of the way and done with it?
Because when we pass wires and balloons down people's heart arteries, that does cause some local damage to the artery. And there is evidence that actually putting a stent in to keep the artery open will actually stop it furring up later.
So what's the difference between that, Neil, and what people describe as a heart bypass?
A heart bypass operation is essentially, if you imagine that the heart arteries are pipes, and if you imagine that you have a blockage, much in the same way that if you have a road bypass, which is trying to bypass a town where there's a lot of congestion, what a heart bypass does is it takes one of the person's own arteries or veins, connects it to the area before the blockage, and then connects it to the area after the blockage, bypassing the blockage. So it's not actually opening up the artery itself, it's bypassing the blockage, encouraging flow beyond the narrowing.
So obviously this approach you were mentioning, where you can thread something up from the leg, is going to be a lot better than having to give someone a pretty serious operation.
Certainly when someone is having a heart attack, people who do heart bypass operations would say that it's preferable that someone has this procedure with a stent. However, some people will need heart bypass operations if they have heart attacks. And heart bypass operations are also done in patients who haven't had heart attacks, but there may be other very good reasons why they need it, such as they have severe narrowings in a lot of important arteries.
So what about when the vessel gets so small? Because obviously as you go further down an artery, it gets smaller and smaller. What about when you get to the point where the damage is beyond the reach with one of these techniques?
Well, there is a range of very good tablets which can be used to treat symptoms. And also there's a lot of new research, I think we're going to be hearing about that a little bit later, such as using stem cells to try and improve the heart function.
And so a very good question, which I think another term which is bandied about and probably very poorly understood, is when someone's having a heart attack, what does that actually mean compared with, say, a cardiac arrest?
I think that causes a lot of confusion for many people. When someone is actually having a heart attack, that is actually when one of the heart arteries blocks off, and that results in an area of heart muscle actually dying. So the larger the area of muscle supplied by that artery, the higher the damage, the higher the blockage, the more damage will occur to the heart muscle. A cardiac arrest is when the heart actually stops beating. There's a variety of things that can cause cardiac arrests. Heart attacks can cause cardiac arrests, but for example, if someone were to develop a very large blood clot in their lung, that could also cause a cardiac arrest.
If some of the heart dies in a heart attack, does it ever regrow, or is it just gone forever?
At the moment, what we know is that the heart muscle doesn't actually, can't come back to life when it's died. But if the heart attack has been small or moderately sized, then the other areas of heart muscle which haven't actually been affected by the heart attack can take over the function of the damaged muscle, and that can still allow the heart to work quite effectively.
Tony is in Westcliff. He wants to know, is stress something that can provoke heart problems?
All of us need some degree of stress in our lives. Stress gives us motivation, it gives us some enthusiasm. So that if there are some people who, when they are feeling especially stressed, can have heart attacks, but it's likely that that heart attack would probably have occurred anyway. Stress on its own, if you do not have narrowings in your heart arteries, will not bring on a heart attack.
And what are palpitations, Neil? Because Paula and Ely said, what actually causes a palpitation, and are they something she should be worried about? She says she was once told the left side of her heart's slightly bigger than the right, and should that confirm her? Should that concern her? I would have thought that the left side of the heart's naturally bigger than the right, because it's got to do more work.
I can't talk specifically about her case. Generally, the left side of the heart is bigger than the right side of the heart. A palpitation is when someone is aware of their own heart beating. That's quite common. I'm often aware of my own heart beating, especially, for example, when I'm in bed going to sleep. Not everyone being aware of their own heart beating is necessarily abnormal. Some people sometimes are aware of occasionally themselves, their heart missing a beat. Lots of things can cause palpitations, but the other times where it perhaps requires investigation is someone has palpitations or an awareness of their heart beating where they feel very unwell with it, or they have times where their heart beats and it can last for a long time, or their heart can go very quickly and they can feel very lightheaded. So sometimes it can be normal, sometimes it can require further investigation.
What actually controls the heart rate and how fast your heart beats at? Because it's cleverly matched, isn't it? The more active you are, the faster your heart goes.
The heart has a very, very well-designed electrical circuit system, which essentially has its own internal pacemaker, which beats very regularly, a little bit like a metronome. Now, that metronome will speed up if the heart needs to beat faster, for example, times of exercise, perhaps at times of stress, and the heart will beat slower when we're more relaxed, so when we're resting, when perhaps we're asleep at night. And that heart has a very well-regulated metronome. However, there are some conditions where that metronome can become damaged or impaired, and we have systems where we can put a pacemaker in. A pacemaker is a small metal box which sits just underneath somebody's collarbone, feeds wires inside the heart, and that can take over the function of the heart's own pacemaker or metronome at times when it becomes impaired.
And just as a sort of last question before we go to our kitchen science this week, very exciting, we're going to introduce you to how blood vessels actually respond to things like adrenaline and other drugs in just a second. But Christine's in Newmarket and says, could a leaky heart valve be fatal? Is it a problem?
There's a wide range of leakiness of different heart valves, and quite often patients are told that by their doctors that they have leaky heart valves. A mild degree of leakiness of particular heart valves is not always necessarily sinister. But if someone has a very leaky heart valve, if left untreated, yes, that could be fatal. So it's certainly worth asking, if you have been told that you have a leaky heart valve, finding out how leaky it is and what needs to be done about it.
Fancy listening to the naked scientists in your bed, on your way to work, or even at work? Why not subscribe to our podcast? For more information, visit nakedscientists.com/podcast.